I had met Mick once or twice through underage games. Mick used to be involved in the county under 14 and 16 teams and that coming up along. And I would have been involved in Kilkenny squads that we would have come up against them in Leinster Championships and that. Not to say I would have known him hugely well now. But I was managing then in the old A Championship. I was over FC Carlow. And I suppose when I felt a player had kind of outgrown the A Championship, I'd send him down in mixed direction. I suppose I would have sent him down Dara Walsh and would have sent him down Jimmy Darmody. When the job came up then, he was kind of somewhat aware of who I was. And I suppose, look, I'll be honest, I made it known to him that I fancied a crack at it. And we had a couple of meetings around it. And I suppose I eventually managed to twist his arm into offering it to me.
The club was only 5 years old at that stage, so things were just starting to slowly click into gear, I imagine. And what was your impression of Wexford and Ferry Carrick Park the first time you went down there?
Yeah, well, I suppose what I did was, I think Noel, who had been in charge previous to myself, I think Noel had made it clear to me and to the team with a couple of games left that he wouldn't be looking to stay on for the following year. Word kind of made its way back to me at that stage through a couple of the players that the job might be there for grabs. So I suppose I had a conversation with Mick before the season ended. There was maybe a couple of games left. Not to say that Mick had offered me the job now or anything, far from it, but I suppose my take on it was better be prepared for something that doesn't happen than underprepared for something that does. So I went down to the last, I think I got the last five games of the season in, three in Ferry Carrick and two away games, where basically I just was going to watch the team and taking notes and all this kind of crack, just in case I did manage to get the role. What were my first instincts? I suppose my first instinct that they seemed to be very, very good going forward, but we're conceding a lot of goals defensively. And I suppose when I say defensively, I mean as a team more so than as a defence. Going forward, I mean, at the time they had, you know, they had some really, really quality attacking players. And you were kind of looking at things and going, you know, because the season hadn't gone wonderfully for them and they were down around the bottom. And you were kind of looking and going, you know, you'd like to think there could be more in these fellas, really, I suppose, you know.
You started with a 6-0 win, I think it was away to Waterford, was that right? So you definitely got that defensive solidity in there anyhow.
Yeah, we were at home, so we were that night. It was a strange one in that you had, you know, obviously it was going to be my first game at that level and you know, an awful, awful, awful lot of new players that I had brought in, going to be their first time playing in the League of Ireland and that kind of stuff. And then you had the added element of the fact Sean Maguire, it was Sean's first year at Waterford. And me and Sean had been together for the previous 6 years at Kilkenny, so obviously I knew just how good Sean was. And I did an awful lot of the prep work that week was in relation to trying to stop Sean and could we cut him down, could we try and deal with him and stop the supply to him, the whole lot. And you know, I remember detailing Craig Wall that night to kind of say to him, look Craig, I need you to sacrifice yourself for the team here. I'm quite happy if you don't really get on the ball at all, so long as you can try and stop Sean for me. And I remember the lads kind of thinking, Jesus Christ, he's really bigging up this fella for a fella who's only 16 or 17. But I think Sean did show his quality that night, but Craig did a brilliant job on him defensively. And once we sniffed out Sean, they kind of struggled, because I'd seen them in pre-season. Their whole game plan was kind of built around them already. And then going forward, we were really, really good. Obviously Tom Elms was absolutely on fire. He got four the same night, and it was a dream start. I couldn't have ever believed it would go as well as it did.
And of course Sean Maguire, now a senior international for Ireland as well, and his career has just gone from strength to strength.
Look, he's an absolute diamond. So he's a fantastic player. He was outstanding for Waterford over the rest of that season. So he was, and I think again the following season he's a cracking player, and I'm delighted. Obviously it didn't work out from first time round when he went across the water, and he came back and he was one of the best players in the League of Ireland over the last 10 years in that stint with Cork. He's done really, really well. I suppose I always kind of believed that he would potentially pull on a senior Ireland jersey, and it's great to see that he's done that, and hopefully there's plenty more appearances to come for him.
You had your own star striker, of course, when you were with Wexford, with Danny Furlong. We'll get to the 2015 season where he scored 30 goals, but he also went away and came back to the club, and he was just such an asset when he did come back, and really was probably one of the best players in that first division.
Incredible natural finisher. Absolutely incredible natural finisher. To be honest with you, I'd say himself and Sean, there's not a whole lot between them in terms of their finishing ability in around the 18-yard box. They're two of the best I've ever had the opportunity to work with in terms of putting the ball in the back of the net. They really, really are. He'd been very, very good for me in the first couple of the seasons we had him, and we knew it inevitably, you know, it was a Premier side would eventually come in for him. And he probably went to Cork at a bad time in terms of chances, opportunities to play. He was pretty much always going to be second in command there, so he was, you know, I'd like to see how things would have worked out for him at that level had he got more starts, because as I say, an absolutely incredible finisher. But you know, we were happy to capitalize on it when we eventually got him back, and look what he did do and what he did in 2015 is phenomenal. I don't know if we'll see a goal scoring ratio like that again at first division or premier level.
But before you got to that 2015, you finished fourth, fifth and fourth in the first 3 years there, so consistency was certainly key, and especially for a young club like Wexford, that consistency was always going to be needed to make sure that you had a steady footing in the league and then you could progress on to bigger things, which you did obviously.
Yeah, look, I suppose all you're ever looking for is signs that things are moving in the right direction. I think that first year probably went better than any of us could have ever expected. As I say, with quite a lot of new faces involved, it was a real, real good buzz around the place. There really, really was. Again, that second season again went really well. And then it was the third one was the really, really tough one. So it was around the time that Mick was having problems and that, and financially, I'll be honest with you, it came very, very, very close to the club not putting a team into the league that year. Yeah. It really, really did. I'm sure Mick won't mind me saying, like we kind of got to a scenario where obviously we were never able to pay a wage to players, but we were able to cover their expenses in those first two seasons. But the only way we could enter a team in the third year was to put together a team where they weren't even getting expenses. To be fair to the players, when Mick made that fairly clear to me, I said to Mick, look, will you give me a bit of time just to talk to the panel? Because we were already in pre-season at this stage training away. I said, will you give me a bit of time to talk to the panel, let them know what the lay of the land is, and look, let's see what the feedback from them is. And to their credit, the real concern from a lot of them was that they had no issue whatsoever with travelling at their own expense. Their only issue was that they thought we might lose our three or four kind of real leaders, real, real top players, real leaders, because they were maybe travelling a bit further or stuff like that, or other teams might be interested in them. So in the heel of the hunt, we managed to pull together a very, very bare minimum amount of money in terms of trying to pay travelling expenses and that. And that kind of few pound we had probably went top heavy towards those kind of three or four players that were doing the majority of the driving and that kind of stuff. And I just can't speak highly enough of the players that they weren't concerned about not getting money. They were just concerned about wanting to be competitive and therefore wanting to make sure that our three or four best players were held on to. And the fact that we managed to do that, then they were happy enough. They were happy to go and without it. So, I mean, it was incredible for them. And I mean, that was the catalyst for what followed, because as I say, we were, you know, if I'd come back to Mick with the wrong answer there, I don't know whether there would have been no club or whether Mick would have just maybe gone ahead with and fielded the youths team from the previous year or something mm-hmm. like that. A massive credit to the players that we managed to come through that season, because that obviously then led to us kicking on from there again the following year.
And speaking of leaders, Graham Doyle, obviously the man in the goals for you for so long. I mean, he was such a key man for the club, both in that 2015 season and beyond. And there's just that iconic picture of him when you look online of him on the lad's shoulders holding the flag after that league win. And just how important was Graham to a setup like that?
I don't know if I can do it justice with words. Graham was the first phone call I made the day after Mick got me the job, or offered me the job, I should say. And contrary to any previous belief, I didn't have any sort of relationship with Graham. I knew who Graham was and Graham knew who I was, but I don't think I'd ever had a conversation with Graham in my life. But I had been an incredible admirer of his in junior football in Kilkenny and what they'd done with their Leinster Junior Cup win the year as well. And I just thought it was ridiculous that he hadn't been playing at League of Ireland level all those years. And look, there was a stroke of luck involved in it as well. And I mean, when you see how important he went on to be, thank God it did go in my favour. When I rang Graham, he actually told me straight out exactly what the line landed. He said he was waiting to find out that week if he was going to be in the Irish junior squad for an upcoming international tournament. If he was in the Irish junior squad, he was going to stick with junior football, because it was a big aim of his to play for Ireland at that level. He phoned me back at the end of the week to say that no, he hadn't been selected and he was ready to rock and ready to give it a go with us. As I say, I have no doubt things for me and probably for Wexford would have played out very, very differently had that call not gone in my favour and against Graham's favour, I suppose. But he was phenomenal. I mean, he was what, 33 maybe, I think, there or thereabouts, coming into the League of Ireland, making his League of Ireland debut. Certainly 32. I don't want to make him sound too much like a dinosaur now, he'll kill me. But you know, he was certainly an elder statesman in terms of making a League of Ireland debut. I doubt there's too many who've ever made a League of Ireland debut that late in their careers. But look, I've tried to do the maths on it a couple of times and I keep coming up with a different number every time. All I know is that Graham started every single game, every single league game in my entire 5 seasons with Wexford. Started and finished every single league game for those 5 seasons, which is just absolutely phenomenal. And throughout those 5 years was consistently the best goalkeeper in the division, in the first division certainly, and he more than covered himself in glory in the Premier as well. So yeah, you just can't underestimate how important he was to everything that was done there.
And 2015 starts, you're away to Newside Cabin Teely. You actually lose that game and at home to Waterford, but then you just go on this incredible run where I think there's just one loss in about 8 or 9, maybe 10 games. And it's just that once you get that winning feeling, I think it's your first win is away to Cove in March. And then everything just seems to click into place and, you know, the wins just keep on coming then.
Yeah, they did, Aidan, but I mean, I'd really go back to the start because, I mean, you can't underestimate how bad the start was and how worrying it was and how depths of despair I and many of the players were in at that stage. I mean, okay, it sounds not too bad there when you said 2 league games. There was 2 cup games thrown in there as well. One of them was against an amateur club in the EA Cup. We lost the opening 2 league games. We lost to an amateur club in the EA Cup. We lost to Dundalk in the Leinster Junior Cup. So it was 4 games, 4 defeats. And I mean, even that opening day of the season, I mean, the feeling in the dressing room after that, because we knew we'd put together a right good squad. And we knew we'd had a great pre-season. And we were really fancying, I won't say we fancied our chances of going and winning the league, but we did fancy trying to nick a playoff spot. And we fancied giving it a really good crack that year. So to lose on the opening night of the season to a team who everybody had kind of said were going to be the whipping boys. I mean, talk about your bubble being burst. I mean, we were just on the floor. We really, really were. And I remember driving home on my own that night, and it was one of the longest drives I've ever had. You were just contemplating everything. What had you done wrong? And I know one or two of the players were in a very, very similar boat. Had a conversation with one senior player the following day who actually was contemplating just packing it in. He just thought, oh, if we're not going to be serious contenders this year, I don't know if I can be putting in the time and commitment. And I could understand where he was coming from. And it took me probably 2 or 3 days to try and talk him back around. We were absolutely on the floor. And then, as you say, I don't know, something just clicked. Because we had a good side. We had a really, really good side. There's no doubt about it. So I don't know what went so wrong with us for those first 4 games. Once things clicked, we just went on a phenomenal run that kind of never really stopped. There was 1 or 2 key moments in it. We were at home to Athlone one night. We were certainly 1-0 up, if not 2-0 up. And the floodlights went. And I remember thinking when that game got refixed, if we don't win this, that's going to haunt us for the rest of the year. It's going to be in our heads that we had 3 points in the bag that have now gone, disappeared on us. And thankfully we did. We won the refixture 2-0. I remember that being a huge, huge thing for us. And by and large, yeah, the results just kept coming, so they did. And like the mood around the place, we weren't even doing anything amazing in training in terms of tactical planning and all that. I suppose
for you, is it just the case of the lads are doing everything I want them to do, I'm just going to let them at it then?
That's it. It was the most important thing was to make sure that the feel good vibe stayed around the place more than any tactical planning or more than anything, you know, like that, any great innovation or anything. It was just making sure that vibe that was around the place, which, like, it really, honestly, it sounds so kind of old school, but the vast majority of our training sessions were, you know, a bit of a possession game at the start, a bit of finishing, and then into 5-a-sides and, you know, 5-a-side mini tournaments amongst everybody. And that was kind of it, you know. It was, you know, yeah, you were doing a little bit of set piece work and that, but I just remember thinking, you know, normally when things go really well for you, you know, you're putting massive amount of planning and tactical work into it. That wasn't the case that year. Everything just seemed to be motoring along so nicely for us. And I suppose it kind of culminated in the back-to-back games against UCD coming into the home stretch. I mean, we beat them at home with Duxie. Shane Dunn got an absolute screamer. And I know a good bit of the support and maybe even in our own dressing room, a lot of people thought, yes, that's it. That's it. We're going to do it from here. But for me, it was the following week. Like, I still had this nagging feeling. No. If we lose the following week, all of a sudden the gap is down to, you know, it's definitely we're still catchable. So we are.
So you had to go up to the Belfield Bowl then and play UCD once again a week later, was it?
That's it. Exactly. And we were down a couple of bodies. I think we'd won suspension, one or two injuries. And I was very anxious going into that. I really was very anxious. In my head, I'd managed to build it up as a, if things go wrong tonight, the wheels are going to come off altogether on this kind of a thing. And I just remember when the final whistle went in that game, you know, even though there was a few games to go, that was it for me. I was kind of saluting people in the crowd, and that Rox, that's right, Rox was either injured or suspended, so he was in the crowd. Mm-hmm. And I remember kind of him pointing out, and I was pointing back up at him, and it was kind of, you know, we kind of knew, right, yeah, no, it's done and dusted from here. Even we can't make a balls of it from here on. And so yeah, it was incredible, really, you know.
And ironically enough, it's Athlone who provide the opposition down in Ferry-Carrig for the title-winning game. You had to wait a bit, and then Danny scores that first goal, and then it becomes a little bit of a rout, and you kind of can stroll towards the end then and really sort of take in the celebrations, and I'm sure you enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was. It was really, really enjoyable. It was, that's for sure. I won't say it was a tough year for me off the field, but we'd had our first child in January. You know, up until that point, you know, I live an hour and 40 minutes from Ferry-Carrig. I was also working a 9-to-5 up in Naas. So, I mean, my daily commute Monday, Wednesday, Friday was Rathdowney to Naas, which was an hour, Naas to Ferry-Carrig, which was an hour and 45, and Ferry-Carrig back to Rathdowney, which was an hour and 45. But it's doable when you're a young man, and yes, you have a partner and a wife, but once you don't have a child, it's, you know, you're still, there's still a lot of freedom there. But when Conor came along that January, you know, I did feel a lot of guilt over the course of that year that I wasn't at home as much as I would have liked to have been. I found that tough over the course of the year, so I did. So I suppose to get the rewards at the end of the year, and fair play to Roisin, she came down that night and brought Conor as well. He's in a lot of the photos from the celebrations and all that kind of crack. At least there was a sense of, well, it wasn't all for nothing kind of a thing at the end. And look, the lads went mental. They had an absolutely fantastic night. So they did, as did I, now, let me tell you. And then, of course, it rolled on to, because I don't think we actually got the trophy until the following week. And we made an awful lot of changes for the following game. So we did, because obviously it was done and dusted now, and we could give lads who had been training hard and maybe hadn't got as much playing time a game. We gave starts to, I remember, John Pear and Conor English, and a few fellas got starts that night, and they were outstanding, and we were brilliant that night and got a great result that night as well. So we probably managed to ring two or three nights out of celebrations, to be honest with you. So we did. We had the Athlone night and the Shells, and then obviously we finished up with a night up in Donegal where we stayed up overnight as well. So we rang a good few sessions out of the celebrations, that's for sure.
And you were dead right too as well. So obviously you do stay on for another year and you're up into the Premier Division. And listen, that was always going to be a bit of a struggle. You've already mentioned the financial troubles that Wexford were in, and you were facing teams, you know, Pats, Rovers, Dundalk, these teams with budgets which are multiples of what you had available. But to be fair, I mean, you did get down to the relegation playoff that year, and it looked to be going so well with that 2-0 victory in the first leg. And then unfortunately it all came asunder.
Yeah, it certainly did, and it'll live with me, I'd say, forever, to be honest with you. So it will. I experienced relegation, unfortunately, as well with Galway, but I don't think Galway would mind me saying it didn't hurt in the same way. You know, we could see it coming a little bit with Galway, so it didn't quite hurt in the same way as it did with Wexford. Ah, look, it was, you know, even talking to you now, there's a feeling in my stomach that just, your stomach would be in absolute knots. Look, I felt like a deer caught in the headlights myself. I messed up big time in the second leg. There's absolutely no doubt about it. And it'll, you know, if there's one night in my entire life that I'd love to live all over again, it's that one. But what can you do? I still don't think it overshadows the 4 years that we had previous to that. You know, I wouldn't swap that one horrendous night as bad at all as it was for the 5 years that I had together with the lads, you know.
there was some positive moments, like you were, you know, about 2 minutes away from grabbing a famous win in Dalymount Park there, and unfortunately Bowes came back to draw 3-3, and then you had the amazing 5-4 over Galway, of course, who you would go on to take over. So there were a couple of nights there that were worth it in the end.
Oh, it was a brilliant season. I loved it so much, and so many of the lads equipped themselves fantastically, you know. Like, it was amazing, Aidan. Like, we won that first division and won it at a canter in the end, and yet still we weren't really getting a huge amount of credit, in the sense that the players weren't getting a huge amount of credit, in that I thought I'd be firefighting most of the off season trying to fight lads away from trying to sign our lads, and they weren't, you know. There wasn't any Premier League teams that seemed to rate the players that we had. And I know going into the start of that Premier League season, the bookies had us nailed on to finish last. Like, the lads were absolutely fantastic. You know, obviously, the likes of Lee Grace kind of emerged from it, I suppose, in terms of what he's gone to do since. But, I mean,
somebody like Ryan Delaney as well, of course, playing over in England now.
Ryan was brilliant, and he was such a young boy at the time. And Gary Laney and Craig McCabe as well, completing that back line, were absolutely fantastic fellas. Again, I'd go back to Rox Keenan. He was very, very much a talisman within that team. He's a guy who just has the word leader printed across his forehead. He really, really is. You know, if you go back even to the year that we won it, I mean, as I said, Danny's goal scoring exploits were sensational. I mean, even that last night going up to Finn Harps, in Danny's head, it was almost like the season was nearly going to be a failure if he didn't manage to get his 30th goal that night, which, even though we were bet, he managed to get. So that was the only thing we wanted out of that night. But Danny would tell you that, you know, he could not have achieved what he achieved that year if it wasn't for Rox playing up front alongside him, because the work rate and his ability in the air and everything that he gave to the side. So he was another fella. I mean, you know, there's a fella making his League of Ireland Premier Division debut at, what, 34, maybe thereabouts at that stage, 33 anyway. So they did fantastically well. They did fantastically well with, as I say, with one horrendous night set to one side. The rest of that season was actually, even though we were down and battling all year long, down around that end of the table, it was incredibly enjoyable.
And finally, Shane, we're both self-isolating at the minute. We're all dying for a bit of football to come back. The FAI are still hoping for this June 19th, it looks like, with the news coming out in recent days about major events have to be less than 5,000 people. You know, is there any chance we'll see any football before the end of the year, do you think?
I don't know. It's a guessing game for us all, really, isn't it? I don't know. I don't know. Like yourself, I was reading the various different options that have been put forward today. I'm up with Dundalk at the moment and had been really, really enjoying the new role that I'd gone into there with them until the coronavirus hit. And you know, I'm licking my lips at getting back into that role as soon as possible. In my diary, I'm supposed to be heading off somewhere over to probably Eastern Europe. They're all in disarray now as well. And look, I don't know if the League of Ireland could survive an entire season without football. So I think we need to try and find some way to make it happen sooner rather than later. That's for sure. I mean, you see St. Pat's, I think,
the behind closed doors seems to be the preferred option. Do you think the football can survive? Will players be able to play without the fans there? I know, obviously, League of Ireland attendances can be quite small, but still, you know, it's still a spectator sport and people will still want to go out and see the teams.
Yeah, they will. I think the players wouldn't have any issue in terms of still being able to put on a performance without supporters there. Obviously, it'd be very, very different and very, very strange, but they'll still have that natural competitiveness within them to do that. The question is the financial side of it. I mean, even the clubs who get small attendances, they still rely on those small attendances for the few bob that they get to try and make the books balance. It's very hard to see how clubs could pay their players, be it a wage or be it just travelling expenses, without the income that they'd be getting from the gate receipts. That's the worry, all right. Look, there's some, obviously, in, I suppose, Dundalk being one of them, that are in slightly better financial situations than others. But it's a real, real testing and real, real trying time for anybody involved in the running and the administration of a club and trying to balance the books. It really is.